Connie, a Red vs. Blue fanfic by Punish and Enslave Suckers, read by An Apocalypse. You joined Project Freelancer to take it apart. Let's just get that out of the way, Agent Connecticut. The first time you meet Agent Maine, you think he cannot possibly be part of the program. Among the other UNSC soldiers present, he stands an average head and shoulders taller, the massive shelf of his upper body impossibly broad, roped with muscle, his head shaved, and when he moves, the density of him is such that you imagine the technicians around him are small bodies caught in his gravity well. Among the other freelancers, he's at least half a foot taller than their tallest member, who is about 6 foot and change. When he looks over his shoulder at you, he doesn't make any expression at all. His face, Maine's face, is unremarkable. His eyes, though, they're eyes that hold you and strip you down to your component parts. Pale gray, shards of green flecked into the iris. You could remember nothing else about his face but the shape and color of his eyes. He doesn't smile at you. He doesn't make a face. He does, however, tilt his head at you, quizzically. And that is how you remember Agent Maine, peering at you over everyone else. He tended to notice you entering a room first, Connie. Maine weighs about 300 pounds without his armor, stands at 6 feet 9 inches, and he can literally bench press a warthog. He was put onto the freelancer roster a month before you and made the top 10 less than a week ago. And you, Agent Connecticut, are pretty sure he's some kind of washout or offshoot from the Spartan 2 program. You were recruited out of the intelligence branch of Oni 2's Special Projects Division, you see, so you know the bioengineering of his carbide ceramic skeletal structure. You know. You wonder why he's here. No. You wonder what's wrong with him. 1 month later, you wrap your arms around Maine's neck from behind. You don't know why the freelancers have co-ed locker rooms, but sometimes it's kind of nice, seeing the others as they lose their armor and turn human again. Maine, in particular, is rare to see out of his armor. You lay your head against the back of his head and close your eyes, and you don't tell him why you're doing it. Maine isn't the sort to examine your actions, or the actions of others in general, too terribly closely. He doesn't particularly react to your small weight between his shoulder blades. He just kind of grunts, glances at you, and then goes back to putting his things in his locker. Hugging Maine is like hugging the hood of a car. You can't quite get your arms around it. It's still warm, and the engine kind of grumbles a little from time to time. The thunder of his heart against your ear makes you want to fall asleep on top of him. Maine waits a minute for you to let go. When you don't let go, he huffs and stands up. You still do not let go, and the result is you hanging off him like a lumpy cape in shorts and a UNSC tank top. He doesn't seem particularly adverse to your efforts at climbing him, pulling yourself up on his shoulders, as though he were a very large shelf you needed to get on. You manage to kind of tuck your knees up under his arms and cling in the manner of a determined limpet. He looks over his shoulder at you. Your face is so close to his, your hair gets in his eyes. He blows at it impatiently, the heat of his breath like a bull snorting in your face. "Tally-ho," you say. He looks at you with that long, silent, judging look that he does. "Charge," you add. He rolls his eyes at you, then the ceiling, and then without a word fits his hands to the back of your knees and hikes your legs up a little higher around his ribs. And this is how Agent Maine ends up giving you a piggyback ride to your quarters. His bare hands almost entirely circle your legs at the knee. The arc between his thumb and forefinger fit easily into the warm bend of your knees. It's incredibly comfortable, that 3-minute walk to your room. When he gets to your room and you still don't let go, he lets go an extremely long, loud growl of air until you lift your face out of his shoulder and prop your chin against the slope of his trapezius.
"Why don't you talk?"
He just looks at you.
"I think that it would be okay if you talked, you know."
He keeps looking at you, and you think of Carolina.
"Okay."
You pull yourself up and kiss the back of his head.
"Night, then."
You wait for him to let go of your legs and let you swing down. You wait. You wait. After a moment, still looking at you, Maine starts walking down the hall instead, heading for the long, circuitous round of the main ship's thoroughfare. His hands at the back of your knees are dry and creased with calluses, your bare legs tucked against his ribs, and as he moves, you are aware, in a clinical fashion, of your belly pressed against his spine, where your heart thumps against your sternum, against his back, the vague warmth between your legs that you kind of dismiss.
Connecticut, you lay your head against the back of Agent Maine's neck, and for the 15 minutes that it takes him to make the full lazy walk about the mother of invention, you are happy. To be clear, Agent Connecticut, you were trained for this. Carolina kisses you. She loops an arm around your shoulders at dinner and she says, "No, York, if I need someone to crack a firewall, I've got my girl Connecticut here." And just to make sure York shuts his unshuttable mouth, she leans over and kisses you on the cheek. She smells like shampoo and sweat, and oh, Agent Connecticut, the warmth grows up the trellis of your heart and takes root inside your soul, and you're in trouble. Agent Washington makes the top 10 2 months later. They pair him with Maine. He survives his first mission and doesn't come back with his guts blown out, head shorn off, belly full of bullets. He just comes back, and then and only then does he become a real person to any of them. Washington is kind of tough and wiry, prone to attempted vehicular manslaughter, amusingly panicky. Carolina and the others take this as the green light to make him run the free runner course naked and shit-fuck drunk and then silly string him in Carolina's room. This is how they make Washington one of them. But you think you can't be the only one who saw the scars, faded darker brown into the olive color of his skin. Soldiers have scars, though, just not all of them are gained in war. With Washington, it's obvious why they recruited him and what's wrong with him. The first time you meet him, he's got a single UNSC-issue duffel over his shoulder. His hair is the wrong color for his face, and he has a true blood earther Northwest accent. His right eyebrow is split, an old scar, bisecting the pale curve of his brow, and you can tell that at some point in his life someone hit him so hard it fractured the zygomatic arch of his right cheekbone, and it healed only mostly clean. He has trouble meeting your eyes until you talk about a mission. He's a friend of Maine's. That says everything about what kind of military outfit Wash must have worked in before. He's got the best mid-range marksmanship in his whole fucking battalion, and while his gaze is not as comprehensive as Maine's, he can dismantle the trajectories and angles of a battlefield with inhuman speed and accuracy. The first time you see him go through a live fire course, you think he's running an AI. He's not. He's doing the math in his head. He can put a bullet through the mouth of a bottle at 100 meters while in free fall, and one time you see him calculate and execute a ricochet, and you think for a split second, he's goddamn beautiful. This is the beginning of how you die, CT. But you don't know it yet. Maine is Washington's shadow, which seems weird because Wash is the darker and smaller of the two. They have an old rapport. It takes Washington a month to get to know anyone else because he spends all his time with Maine, and Maine sticks to Washington in a way that dumbfounds the rest of the team, who, with the exception of you, had more or less settled their characterization of Maine, which is to say they did not attribute him much character at all. The first time Washington walks into the war room, he says, "Short change!" Then crosses the room and bangs a forearm against Maine, who meets him halfway and growls the first word you have ever heard him say. "Seattle." Washington laughs. "Seattle?" repeats York. Seeming to remember they are not alone, Maine and Washington exchange a look. Then Washington says, "Sorry, I'm Agent Washington. I just got reassigned to the Mother of Invention, sir. The director told me to report to the war room to await orders." Carolina tilts her head. "He's deploying you. How long have you been aboard?"
10 minutes.
York pretends to flip an imaginary table. "Well, fuck," he says, and the rest of you know what he's thinking. The director has already burned 7 other states in the last 6 months. You're all sick of recruits. You're sick of watching them go down full of bullets and screaming out their blood in the back of the Pelican, their faces shorn off their skulls as they hemorrhage their guts into their armor. Washington is plated in gray and yellow, like a road from the 21st century, and he senses the hostility immediately.
It's fine. I've been running missions."
"You've never run at level 0, says Carolina gently, but with that usual underlying layer of steel. "Open up your bio-HUD, Washington. I want your ranking scores. Recalibrate for command and inter-team link. Sync? Sync," he says, like it's a reflex, not a response. Carolina looks up. She does that when she's looking at something in her HUD. York and the twins await her verdict. Wyoming, who has long since declared he no longer gives a single bloody fuck about the Greenhorns, just audibly yawns and ignores them all. You, Connecticut, are watching the way Maine elbows Washington, who is trying to stand at semi-attention for Carolina. The new recruit shoots him a quick knock-it-off kind of glance. Maine just shoves him in the shoulder and knocks him off balance, bored, disdainful, familiar. not worried. Carolina looks at Washington. Just follow our lead.
Agent Main dive bombs an insurrectionist soldier, lands feet first on top of him, and crushes him in front of you. He doesn't even register the kill. He powers off at a sprint, Washington close behind, the mean report of his battle rifle ending voices all over the field. You match Washington's speed and you cover him, activating your armor mod and duplicate yourself again, and suddenly your three-man team is an army, a fucking siege. That's a trick, though. Main is all the army you need. He hits their barricades like a freight train, and you and Washington hurdle the low wall and fill the world with bullets and blood. You snap a man's neck and take possession of their turret, turn it on the other barricades until Washington scrambles up the sidewall, sprints across the battlement, and puts four grenades into their hot box. The explosion silences the field. Main's white armor is mostly red now, Washington's visor splattered, the anti-liquid shielding wicking off the blood almost instantly as he hops down from the wall, jogging over to join you. "You good?" he asks you, stepping over the bodies.
"Yeah," you say. "I'm good."
"Carolina, this is Team Beta. Extraction zone is clear."
"That was fast," she says over calm, lazily admirable. "How'd you clowns manage that?"
"Connie," says Washington. If he's generous with a credit, he doesn't seem conscious of it. That holo projection mod really freaks people out. He and Maine never seem to notice the leaderboard the way the others do. Maine, you know, will never lose his place on the team so long as he can function. He's the only one of his kind the project has available. He shakes the blood from his armor like a dog, coming over to crouch down and go through the artillery in their weapons locker, while Washington takes a seat on the wall of sandbags. In the later days, you will remember them like this, rifling through corpses, idle and awaiting orders.
"They don't look like insurrectionists," you say.
Maine ignores the comment. Wash looks at you. You can feel him blink behind his visor.
"What?" "I said they don't look like insurrectionists."
"What's an insurrectionist look like?" says Wash, shucking his spent magazine from his rifle. He wipes blood from the stock, fits it back under his arm, and you can't imagine him many other ways than this, sitting armed among the dead. "I thought the point was they didn't look like anything." May notices something still alive behind the sandbags and goes to stomp it dead. Wash doesn't register him doing it.
"Never mind."
"It's called doubling," they told you. "Be one person to them and one person to us. Separate yourself, but be their teammate. You will have to be one of them if this is going to work." You take the soda can from Washington's fingers and put the curly straw on your tongue. It's 9 p.m. GST and it's lights out in an hour, so the agents of Project Freelancer are raiding the mess hall before bed. You consciously disregard how the plastic is still warm from being in his mouth a second ago, that it tastes a little like whatever his tongue must taste like, and you take a sip of whatever he's having and make a horrific face at him. It's almost funny how crestfallen he looks. You're friends with Maine, you see, so he wants to impress you.
"That's awful."
"He's not." York goes sailing by. "You're the only one who likes that shit. Face it, Wash."
"It's not that bad," he says, but York is already gone. "Seriously, I don't get it. How have none of you had Pepsi before?"
"I've had Pepsi," you say. "That's not Pepsi. That's bootleg rebranded Earther stuff. I think I'm gonna be sick."
"Pepsi is from Earth. How is it bootleg?"
"I like my colony knockoff better."
"Oh, come on. It's not that."
Maine plucks the can from Washington's hand, takes the straw out, then hucks the rest of it into the bin at the end of the table. Wash stares. Maine looks at him. Wash opens his mouth, Maine hands him the straw back and shakes his head at Wash, in the manner of a man talking his criminally insane friend down from a ledge. Wash wrinkles his nose. "You're both assholes," Washington says.
"No, your soda is ass. Oh god, I can still taste it."
"Stop patronizing me." Maine drops a fist on top of Washington's head. Not hard, just kind of puts it there and pushes down, flattening Wash's hair and forcing his head down a little.
"Hey!"
Maine growls significantly. It might be actual words, but you're too busy laughing to catch it. Washington scowls up at his bigger partner. "What are you looking at me for? She asked what it tasted like."
"You could have warned me your taste buds are dead from years of abuse.
You guys suck."
"I need something to wash my mouth out."
"I'll get you another soda," says Washington, standing up. "Maybe the grape one or something." You grab the front of his shirt as he stands. Tug him down.
"No," you say. "I need something to..." You kiss him.
You can feel the surprised shape of his mouth against yours. Slightly open, the edge of his teeth scraping your upper lip, and your nose bumps his a little, and you think, he smells good.
You're not sure exactly what he smells of, though. He smells like soap, like skin, like something. You adjust your angle a little, feel the tension go out of his jaw, his mouth open a little against yours, and his tongue tastes exactly like what you tasted before you got a mouthful of bad earth soda preservatives. You let go of him. "Thanks," you say, and stand up.
Wash struggles visibly to say something, leaning against the table like he needs it for support. What he manages is, "You're welcome?" in that kind of falsetto he achieves when he's stressed out. Maine is laughing, the massive skyline of his shoulders shaking silently, and...
They don't tell you. With doubling, both are real. You hug Maine from behind again, in the rec room this time, and hum happily against the back of his neck. This time he doesn't huff at you. He just stands up and carries you to your bunk, your cheek warm against his bare shoulder. You pass North in the hallway and he blinks at you like you might not be real. You wave down at him. A little stunned, he waves back, staring until the both of you are past him. York also passes the both of you, but he just says, "Hey man, sup Connie?"
"Did you?" You can hear North saying. "York, did you see?" "Don't get excited. He only does it for Connie. I asked." "Oh, I... Wait, what?"
Here is where you fall in love with him, CT.
"Do you even know who you're working for?" Wash doesn't move. The man who is screaming, the man between you and Washington, has an M6G PDWS leveled at his head. Wash has got nothing but his combat knife, hilt flat in his hand, his rifle emptied on his back. You've really fucked it up, Connecticut. Your panic is absolute. The insurrectionist continues to aim at Washington. Do you even know who you're fighting, you psycho? You fucking dog! Move, Wash, just move. You have no idea, do you? I'm gonna put you down right now, you sorry...
You put a bullet in his spine as he fires. The shot slams into Wash's energy shield, glances off his armor, and Wash just grunts, rears back, and puts a K-bar half a foot deep into the man's right eye socket. The spin of the blade is a flicker. The wet thunk is followed immediately by a gunshot. Your teammate puts an additional bullet in the man's chest and blows out the back of his head. Washington's panic is in his overkill. The knife, though, it remains where it stuck, slammed through the man's ethnoid bone into his now ventilated brain. He hits the floor on his knees, face down, and drives the blade up into the hole at the back of his skull. Wash doesn't notice. He moves to join you, already accessing your bio-HUD through his inter-team link.
"You okay, Connie? I lost track of you. What happened?"
"I just shot my handler," you think.
"Connie?"
"I'm fine, Wash. He got me with an EMP. It knocked out my HUD."
"Damn, how'd he get close enough to use a short burst?"
"Because mid-range EMP doesn't work on Freelancer armor. He assumes you got taken down, that you're hurt, that you didn't disable your attacker because you couldn't move until he was about to open fire."
"Are you sure you're okay?"
"Yeah, Wash." You touch his shoulder. "He didn't even graze you, did he?"
"Nah, I'm fine. You didn't need to hit him."
"I helped you kill my handler." "Let's go," you say, and Wash falls into line behind you. Your boots track your handler's blood out the door, and you find it caked in the tread of your boots later that night. You think about Washington standing in that door. You think about him putting a fucking knife through his enemy's skull. You think about how telling Washington to kill something is to see it dead shortly. You fucking dog. You think about Washington and Maine in the mess hall, laughing. You think about Washington and Maine in the killing field, waiting. Your fingers curl into Washington's hair, the short edges of your nails scraping the back of his scalp, the flat of your palm fisting into the blonde mat beneath your hand, still sweat sticky and thick between your fingers. His rifle is on the mattress next to you, half-assembled like your armor is only half-assembled on the footlocker by your bed. Bite down on your lower lip until you taste copper, a bite of pain to counterpoint how it feels every time he drags his tongue across your skin and sets your nerves alight. The lean slope of Wash's bare shoulders shift, shadows moving down his spine. In the half-light, you can see more scars, shrapnel tracks in the meat of his upper back. He breathes through his nose, grunts slightly. His tongue must be going numb by now. You cup the back of Washington's neck, open your knees a little wider, and oh, fucking Christ. Swear to God you can let him go whenever you want to. Swear to God you're doing this because you like how he moves, and the way the muscles in his hands flex under the skin when he's disassembling a rifle, how it makes you want to ask him to disassemble you.
Swear to God, Connecticut, you wouldn't be doing this for any other reason than boredom, any other reason than the moment when Washington stood up and stretched, and you couldn't help but put your hand on the flat of his stomach, and he stared at you. You're on your back in your bed, one foot braced against the wall behind Wash. He's kneeling on the floor with his head bent, one hand on your right knee, his head between your legs. And every time the orgasm comes, Connecticut, you ride it out, hoping at the end of it you'll be satisfied. That one more time won't make a difference. That it has anything to do with how many times Wash is willing to make you climax. You swear to God you're not compromised by the way his hair smells. You have a thought, violent and horrific. You reach for the pistol on the bed next to you, put your hand on it. You pick it up and thumb the safety. The weight is familiar to you. You slide your fingers through Washington's hair and imagine putting a bullet through his head. Imagine him slumping in your lap. Imagine sitting there with a loss, and you imagine how it would sit in your soul. You calculate if you could stand it. Wash, oblivious to the gun because it's unfathomable to him that you'd hurt him, has one hand on your leg. He's got his tongue on your clit, but it's the small, idle, circular movement of his thumb against the dimple in your knee that arrests you. You come so fucking hard, Agent Connecticut. Your knees go weak and your toes go numb. You put the gun down, and Wash looks up at you. You okay?
Yes.
Are you... You kiss him and pull him onto the bed with you. Washington doesn't want to sleep with you, it turns out. Wash, he's kind of neutral on sleeping with anyone. You figure what he actually wants is someone to sleep next to. He just lies down and goes to sleep immediately, in that way he does, with his head against your shoulder. And as you lie there, sweat cooling on your skin, Wash is breathing in your ear, you realize you're happy. You realize why people like Wash and Maine could be okay with what they're doing. They're all so fucking beautiful, aren't they? Weaponized and running. You can admire their design like you can admire the bioengineering and the mathematics that went into Maine's skeletal structure, the mechanics of the BR-85HB SR battle rifle Wash left disassembled on the bed near your feet. There is a beauty in the obliteration they bring, the fallout of a bullet in the brain and 500 pounds of force. Washington is asleep and breathing right now, though. He doesn't look like a freelancer. But you know him at his function. You know him when he's killing. Connecticut, you're so happy right here. But you're not a washout Spartan or an inner-city kid with a split brow. The edifice of your motivations are not like theirs. Like I said, you're here to take them apart, Connie. You lie there with your hand on your sidearm, stroking the metal like you should be stroking your teammate's skin, thinking about the hole you're going to put in your soul, wondering if you can do it. Let me tell you the ending. You double and double and double yourself, Connecticut. You duplicate until you are as fragmented as Alpha's digital soul. Agent Texas does not care if you love Maine or Wash or Carolina, or that there are pieces of you that trust a dead woman named Allison. You die, Connie. But before that happens, for moments, days, long stretches of time, you were happy. This has been Connie by Punish and Enslave Suckers, read by Anapocalypse. For more fic by the same author, check out Punish and Enslave Suckers on Tumblr and Stark Raving on AO3. The music you heard in this podfic is from the Red vs. Blue Season 10 soundtrack by Jeff Williams. Thanks for listening.